Drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Ford Motors is expected to announce a major corporate restructuring today that will include job cuts and loss of benefits among white-collar workers. Foreclosures are up in the U.S. More than 115,000 homes went into foreclosure last month. That's 53% higher than a year ago. Florida had the most, 16,500. Nevada had the largest percentage increase, 255% in just 1 month. California's Attorney General says he has enough evidence for indictments in the Hewlett-Packard spy scandal case, but isn't sure whether criminal charges will be filed. Pfizer has won a victory in the Netherlands, where the District Court of The Hague has ruled that a generic drug maker in India cannot market a generic version of Pfizer's cholesterol-reducing drug Lipitor until Pfizer's patent runs out in the year 2011. Apple Computers announced that it will start selling movie downloads from Disney. California has raised its minimum wage to $8 an hour beginning or by the year 2008. The federal minimum is $5.15. Gold is trading this hour at $597.40 an ounce. Silver's at $11.35. And light sweet crude up 50 cents a barrel, trading this hour at $64.33. On Wall Street, the markets are all higher this hour. The Dow is up 23 points at 11,520. NASDAQ is up by 6 at 2,221. And the S&P 500 is up 3 at 1,316. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It's good to be back. But have you been listening to the president lately? Have you been listening to the person in charge at the White House? I'm talking, of course, not about the president, but our vice president, Dick Cheney. He was on Meet the Press last Sunday giving really the standard argument still at this late date for why we need to be so involved in Iraq. And asking him tough questions, of course, was Tim Russert, asking him questions largely about why we're losing in Afghanistan. And maybe we might want to focus on, after all, the country that attacked us on September 11th. I want to play in detail a large part of that interview and comment on it, because I think too often we hear these things that the vice president says and we just let them go. We don't counteract them piece by piece, inch by inch. So today and this week we're having a three-part series, The Many Lives of Dick Cheney. Yesterday we played an interview with Dick Cheney, if you will, that I did back in November 28th, 2005. Wasn't quite an interview. I mean, he talked and I responded, and he talked some more. I can't say he was actually talking to me, but it goes through a lot of these same rationales. And what you'll find if you listen to yesterday's show, which is still archived on my website at radioinsidescoop.com and on the White Rose Society, is that really his arguments haven't changed very much. So as I go through and debate again with Dick Cheney, and we're not going to be able to finish this today, we'll do more tomorrow, I want you to listen to how he's always trying to invoke fear, how he's trying to blame the Democrats, and how he always tries to take the attention off of Afghanistan and on to Iraq. And the interview begins with a really good question by Tim Russert. Bob, let's play the first clip.
Donald Rumsfeld wondered out loud, are we creating or recruiting more terrorists than we are killing? What do you think, 5 years later? Are there more terrorists now than there were 5 years ago?
It's hard to say, Tim, and hard to put a precise number on it. It's changing and evolving to some extent. We've done enormous damage to al-Qaeda.
Now, that's very interesting, okay? Vice President Cheney is not saying whether or not there's more or less terrorists, than fewer terrorists than there were on September 11th. Now, this is really interesting because when the vice president says, I don't know, it usually means he's hiding something. He said early on he didn't know whether Iraq had any connection with 9/11. That was to imply that there was a connection. And in this interview, you'll see that he finally gives up on that connection. But now think about this. He's 100% sure that this is the right policy. He's going to go on throughout this interview, and we're going to play a lot of it, and talk about why it's so good that Saddam Hussein is no longer in power, and how the war in Iraq was the right thing, and how the war in Iraq, in essence, has to be 10 times more important than the war in Afghanistan, because we have 10 times the troops there, even though Afghanistan's a much larger country. And yet, he can't tell us whether we have more terrorists or less. Now think about this. If the war in Iraq is creating more terrorists than we had before, then maybe it wasn't such a good idea. So what does he say? He says it's changing. He says it's evolving. He says we've done enormous damage. But then he points out in the very next line how the recent plot in Great Britain, the plot to blow up airplanes, was new terrorists that were recruited. Well, what's interesting, of course, is that Al-Qaeda is using our war in Iraq to recruit more terrorists. And even the vice president can't say whether or not we have more or less. There was a poll, though, that cited in the Meet the Press news interview where you have Tim Russert point out that the poll asked Americans whether the U.S. involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan is creating more terrorists or eliminating terrorists. And 54% of Americans agree it's creating more terrorists, and only 15%, that's less than half of the people that still support George Bush, 15%, less than one in six, thinks we're actually eliminating terrorists. That's pretty bad numbers. And in Afghanistan, we seem to be losing the battle. Let's play the next clip.
But in Afghanistan, the one of the British commanders there, Richards, said that 70% of the Afghan people are undecided, that we only have until the end of the year to secure that country, that the Taliban is back.
Okay, so even in Afghanistan, we've taken our eyes off the prize. We've invaded Iraq, and the British commander is saying that 70% of the people are undecided. They don't know what to do. The Taliban is back. They don't know whether to be with us or them. Now, many Democrats are saying that we need more troops in Afghanistan. John Kerry, in fact, called for increasing troops. And because no one wants the draft, we all understand that has to come out of Iraq. In Iraq, we have as many troops as we've ever had before, 140,000, 10 times the numbers we have in Afghanistan. And the people in Afghanistan are wondering if we're going to be there for them, if we're going to stand up for the fight. Now, listen to how Cheney responds. He responds by taking that same argument. People are wondering whether we're going to be there for them or not, and says that the Democrats basically want to bring our troops home. We do want to bring the troops home from Iraq and redeploy them in Afghanistan. If anything, we would help the Afghani people know that we're by their side. I've argued for a long time it's not just a question of bringing the troops in Iraq home. It's a question of strengthening our troops in Afghanistan. But Cheney immediately uses this opportunity to attack the Democrats. Play the next clip.
Our strategy for doing that is to break our will. They can't beat us in a stand-up fight. They never have. But they're absolutely convinced they can break our will. The American people don't have the stomach for the fight. So you look at the situation today in Afghanistan or even in Iraq, and you've got people who have doubts. They want to know whether or not, if they stick their heads up, the United States, in fact, is going to be there to complete the mission. And those doubts are encouraged, obviously, when they see the kind of debate that we've had in the United States. Suggestions, for example, that we should withdraw U.S. forces from Iraq simply feed into that whole notion, validates the strategy of the terrorists.
Okay, so you got Cheney's argument. If we withdraw troops from Iraq and put them in Afghanistan, the Afghanis will feel less secure because they know that we've withdrawn troops from Iraq. That's actually his argument. I mean, you heard it. I'm not making it up. He's arguing that, in effect, we cannot help our troops in Afghanistan. We cannot capture Osama bin Laden. We cannot fight back the Taliban, the same group that murdered 3,000 Americans 5 years ago. We have to leave them in Iraq because if we leave Iraq, the people in Afghanistan will wonder about our commitment to Iraq, and they'll give up on Afghanistan. He's actually making that argument. And until you take it apart and look at it piece by piece, I don't think you see it. And then, of course, Tim Russert mentions a very important article that I want to talk at length about that was in the Washington Post. Let's go to the next clip.
Well, let me stay on Afghanistan because the front page of the Washington Post today, Bin Laden, The trail is stone cold, according to intelligence officials. You agree with that?
I don't. I haven't read the article. I saw the headline.
He hasn't read the article. Well, it's a very important article. In fact, I'm going to post it on the website at the end of my broadcast today. You really should read it. It came out last Sunday's Washington Post. The title is Bin Laden Trail Stone Cold. And there's so many things that are very interesting in that article. Everything from the fact that in December 01 and on into March 02, right, you know, just a few months after September 11th, we actually had a tag on Bin Laden. We had an idea where he was in Tora Bora, and we thought that our Afghan mercenaries would be able to do the job. George Bush, in fact, Don Rumsfeld, decided that it was better to pay off Afghanis, whose loyalty was unclear, to capture Osama bin Laden. And what did bin Laden do, that bastard? He paid more to these mercenaries. He trumped our price, and they let him go. We actually have a video, as first came out in the Washington Post article, of bin Laden heading off toward Pakistan. And in March 02, in preparation for the war in Iraq, we withdrew troops and unmanned aircraft that were looking over that territory. We withdrew the war in Afghanistan in order to fight in Iraq. And the amazing thing is Cheney, he hasn't even read the article, but he disagrees. He says very clearly we never gave up the fight in Afghanistan. Let's listen to what he has to say.
He's not the only source of the problem, obviously. Tim, if you killed him tomorrow, you'd still have a problem with al-Qaeda and with Zawahiri and the others. But bin Laden has been a top priority for us from the very beginning. He continues to be a top priority today. That hasn't changed. The president and I get periodic reports on our efforts in that regard. There's been no lessening of our interest or of our activity with.
Well, here he says, bin Laden has been a top priority from the beginning. But when I come back, I want to quote from this article and talk about the sources in it, which show very clearly, and I think it's a great issue for the 2006 elections, that bin Laden was not a priority from the beginning. We're going to take a break. If you want to call in and join this discussion, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. As we take apart, piece by piece, the Vice President of the United States, we'll be right back after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Radio program, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m., connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, sir. It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent you an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are total camp.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio.
This is great. This is great. So do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Perch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network. Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're taking apart the most powerful man in the world. I'm talking, of course, about the man who leads the United States of America. I'm talking, of course, about the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, the person who gives orders to our president and tells him what to do, the leader of our fight in the war against a tactic called terrorism, but doesn't seem to realize quite who we're fighting. He was on Meet the Press last Sunday. Tim Russert asked him some good, tough questions. It's good to see him come out of his cave to try to answer the questions of people who wonder about our policy, even though he makes very clear that those who question our war in Afghanistan, our war in Iraq, that those who question the tactics of the president, well, we're just helping the terrorists. And, you know, that argument is going to be made a lot between now and November, when the congressional elections occur, the 2006 congressional elections. And I just want you to think about it. Anytime one of your Republican friends comes up to you and says to even question the president's strategy, to suggest we might want to redeploy troops from Iraq, well, that just helps the terrorists. I want you to ask your Republican friend that if we were to invade Canada tomorrow, and the next day we were to say, is it a good idea to invade Canada? Our greatest ally? Well, the response would obviously be, don't question our war against Canada. Heck, you're helping the terrorists. You're helping the Canadians. You're helping those that we're fighting the war against. You're helping America's enemy. You see, that argument can be made in any war. No matter how stupid, no matter how ridiculous, you can say, hey, when you question our war, what are you doing? You're against America's troops. You're giving aid and comfort to the enemy. So because that is an argument that can be used in any war, no matter how stupid, heck, you know, if we invaded an American state tomorrow, well, they could say you're helping that state. It's ridiculous. It's a stupid argument, and it's worse. I would argue that it's actually an unpatriotic argument, that anyone who makes that argument really does hate America, because what they're saying, in effect, is that democracy has no place in America, that challenging the president's policy has no place in America, and, you know, they may be happier under a Taliban-like regime. Before I get back to the interview, I need to go over the Washington Post article. It was a very powerful article, and I'm going to post it up on my website at radioinsidescoop.com so you can read it yourself, because it flies in the face of everything that our government has been telling us. The first line of the article is that the clandestine U.S. commandos whose job is to capture or kill Osama bin Laden have not received a credible lead in more than 2 years. Nothing from the vast U.S. intelligence world, no tips from informants, no snippets from electronic intercepts, no points on any satellite image has led them anywhere near the al-Qaeda leader. The trail has grown stone cold.
we have lost bin Laden. 5 years after September 11th, the man who murdered 3,000 Americans is not only no closer to being captured, he's much farther away. And the article examines exactly how that happened. I mean, after all, this is the president that argues that he was going to stand firm, and his rhetoric is always about fighting terrorists. And yet, the murderer of 3,000 Americans has gone not only unpunished, but we're not even searching for him anymore. Did you know there is not a single person in the United States of America in charge of the hunt for bin Laden with the authority to direct covert CIA operations, to collect intelligence, to dispatch the right units? Not a single person. As one frustrated counterterrorism official confided to the Washington Post, quote, there's nobody in the United States government whose job it is to find Osama bin Laden. Nobody. Nobody. Why is that? How did we lose Osama bin Laden? Well, we now know that we lost him at Tora Bora. We lost him because, heck, he paid the Afghani mercenaries more than we paid them because, you know, we didn't want to use U.S. troops for that. It's worth spending 2,500 American lives, 20,000 wounded. It's worth it to send 140,000 troops into Iraq to safeguard American, or really Iraqi oil. But it's not worth risking a life to capture Osama bin Laden. I know so many people who joined the military precisely to fight Osama bin Laden, and apparently it wasn't worth the trip. So why haven't we captured him? Well, the article makes it clear. The CIA lacks access close to al-Qaeda's inner circle. Pakistan is unwilling to pursue him. The Taliban and al-Qaeda have reemerged in Afghanistan, and Iraq, quote, has depleted U.S. military and intelligence resources, unquote. And it also mentions the U.S. government's own disorganization. What happened? Well, in March 2002, we reduced the number of special operation troops. Several people confirmed this. And as Flint Leverett, expert on the Middle East, the National Security Council, has said, in March, Bush, quote, decided to pull out most of the special operations troops and their CIA counterparts in the paramilitary division that were leading the hunt for bin Laden in Afghanistan to prepare for war in Iraq. Leverett writes, I don't know of anyone who thought that was a good idea. It's very likely that bin Laden would be dead or in American custody if we hadn't done that. We also reduced unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, that were searching it because we needed them for the war in Iraq, which became a priority in 2003. And now, and this is the kicker, which I'll want to talk about further, now Pakistan has announced a truce with the Taliban. They're no longer fighting the Taliban anymore. Our great ally, Pakistan, has announced a truce. And this is going to win the war against the terrorists who killed us, who killed 3,000 Americans? I'll get back to the interview with Dick Cheney in a second. First, I want to go to my caller, Sarge in Mississippi. Sarge, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yes, nice to be with you, Mark.
Good to have you calling again.
You know, this war on terror, I'm going to tell you, there is no war on terror being conducted. I was stationed in Ramstein, Germany, and I actually faced terrorists. I saw them firsthand, face-to-face. The Bader-Meinhof gang.
Yeah.
And we had a German worker that was on the gate, on the front gate that day, and they had threatened to blow up the C-5. So we started posting posting people who were experienced on C-5s, and I pulled the duty that day. And the way the Germans did with the Bader-Meinhof, everybody in the country knew who to look for. They knew what to look for and how to spot them. There wasn't any of this, we can't tell you because it would compromise national security, trash.
Right.
So these guys are not conducting any war on terror. And these Bader-Meinhof came in, the gate guard, Georg Joachim, caught them, and they got away and started to try and climb over the fence to the C-5 where I was. Okay, we were prepared for them, and we were totally ready, and they managed to escape us, but we almost had them. And later on, the Germans did catch them and killed every one of them.
And they what we've done is we've taken our troops out of there. We have virtually no troops today inside Pakistan. There's this vast area, this sort of no man's land. In fact, when I get back to the interview, Dick Cheney talks about this no man's land. He knows it exists. We know where bin Laden is. No, we don't know what cave he's in, but we have a rough geographical area. Now, think what would happen if we took 140,000 troops out of Iraq and put them in Afghanistan. What's amazing to me is that every time the president talks, every time the vice president talks, they talk about 9/11, they admit it has no connection to Saddam Hussein, and the next breath, after talking about 9/11, they talk about how we have to keep up the war in Iraq.
Well, you know, they never have convicted not one person that was involved in 9/11, not one. They have failed miserably at every single thing they've done except to create more terror for us, like here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Terror is the Bush administration. Terror is people like Trent Lott, people like Haley Barbour. These are your real terrorists because they are doing everything they can to make life just as miserable for us as they possibly can.
Well, they certainly are. That's actually a question of domestic policy, which I will get back to, I promise. I'm not going to spend my whole time on foreign policy. There's no question. People are working harder for less wages, and life's just getting harder for ordinary
people. Well, see, when you got that, Mark, now how good can your foreign policy be? Because if your internal policy is bad, your foreign policy isn't going to work either.
And if you're going to spend $300 billion on a foreign policy that's not working, on a war in Iraq that we're losing, in fact, we now know that the Anbar province, they said it's hopeless, we'll never get control there.
Is fought with police action. It's not fought with military forces. Your military is not trained for that type of action. That is a police action, and to try and use military to do it is wrong. If we had gone into Afghanistan, if we had finished the job there, Afghanistan would be a stable country today, a relatively stable. Instead of invading Iraq, now we've got two countries that are in total chaos.
I'll tell you this. I think sometimes military action is an appropriate response. I mean, to me, it's not really terror. See, the whole problem with terrorism, we really shouldn't even use that word anymore because terror is a tactic. It's not a people. People don't go around and say, we're terrorists. No, I don't know anyone, including the worst terrorists, who says, hey, you know, we're proud to be terrorists. We need to know who we're fighting against. And if we would say the war on Al-Qaeda, then that's fair. Al-Qaeda attacked us. I have no problem with self-defense. And then we can see how are we succeeding in the war against Al-Qaeda. But when you have this amorphous thing like war on terrorists, it's like the war on drugs. There's no way to know if we're winning or losing. The president says we're winning, but we just have supposed to take his word for it.
Well, him not even pursuing bin Laden, right, and their connection, the Bush family connection with the bin Ladens, all that just kind of makes me feel like there is no real effort being made, Mark.
Well, I think that the president just thought that Iraq was more important.
Yeah.
And the
Mark, I'm
going to
let you go.
But
I appreciate you taking my call, and everybody's welcome to come by our site, powersandmorrison.com.
Sounds good. Thanks for your call, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's really the heart of it, isn't it? I mean, if we were to call it the war against Al-Qaeda, we could judge whether we're fighting it right. But the president announces 9/11, says it's a war on terror, and the people who committed 9/11 are going unpunished. I would like a president who would capture bin Laden dead or alive, but unfortunately we don't have a strong president who's willing to commit American resources where it's needed. To me, this is not a Democratic question. This isn't a Republican president question. It's a question of who is going to defend the United States against an attack. And, you know, when some guy attacks you and you spend all your resources attacking someone else, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. When we get back, I want to get back to the interview with Dick Cheney and specifically on what's going on in Pakistan. To me, Pakistan is the heart of understanding why we are losing our war against Al-Qaeda. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected, would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow. Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It is 5 years after September 11th, and of course, midterm elections are coming up, and I'm sure the Republicans are going to say, we are tough in the war on terror. But what happened on 9/11? Are Americans that stupid? Who attacked us? I'll give you a hint. It wasn't Saddam Hussein. It was a guy by the name of Osama bin Laden, and he rules a group called Al-Qaeda. And we haven't managed to track him down, largely because we're fighting the war in Iraq. In the Washington Post, they point out that a lot of these bureaucratic battles, you have Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld fighting with the CIA, and when the CIA, in fact, killed a certain al-Qaeda leader in November 2002, Rumsfeld was angry that the CIA got to do it and not the Defense Department. It's amazing. And the real amazing thing, I think, is the country that nobody talks about, the country where Osama bin Laden is almost certainly located, a country called Pakistan. Now, Pakistan, of course, used to be a big ally of the Taliban and of Afghanistan, and to a large extent, they still are. I was shocked to read in the Washington Post that Pakistan has publicly announced a truce with the Taliban. A truce. That's it. No more fighting. Taliban, you know, you leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. And in fact, there's one of the reasons why there's only small numbers of U.S. forces in the area where we know Osama bin Laden is because, quote, their role is so sensitive politically. Pakistan officially denies any U.S. presence, unquote. Pakistan officially denies any U.S. presence? Well, first of all, we've got articles saying that we're there, so that doesn't help. But if they're officially denying any U.S. presence, how are we ever going to achieve anything? We have U.S. troops in Afghanistan, the few that are there, complaining that they have too little to do, and the ones in Pakistan, even less. So this is an important issue. This is one that you don't hear about in the campaigns. What are we doing in Pakistan now that there's a truce? Well, let's hear what Dick Cheney has to say in the next clip. First, we have Tim Russert, of course, mentioning the peace pact. Let's play the clip, Bob.
Pakistan has now a peace pact with the terrorists in the area where we think bin Laden is, creating what Richard Clark, the former White House advisor on terrorism, calls a sanctuary. And reports from the RAND Corporation that the Pakistan CIA, the ISI, are in cahoots with the Taliban. So if the Pakistanis aren't willing to seek bin Laden and have a peace pact with the terrorists, where are we?
It's a great question. I mean, if this is where bin Laden is, and if Pakistan isn't willing to help us, where are we? Maybe we need to devote more resources into persuading Pakistan to do the right thing. You know, maybe it could be some kind of trade deal. You know, maybe we could say, look, you know, we'll. I mean, if there's any place that's worth fighting, and look, all these wars, I've got to say, they're difficult. There's no question about it. It's very hard occupying a country. But if we're going to occupy any country, shouldn't we occupy in order to capture the person who attacked us? The thing that I have to say, and it bothers me on the left and the right, there are people on the left that say that we should never send troops abroad. Not too many, I got to say. I think most of those people are in very small numbers, and usually that they're mentioned, in fact, by the Republicans more than Democrats. But there are certainly Americans out there that think we should never go into another country. I disagree with them. And I think most of the world disagrees with them. Everyone understood we were attacked on September 11th. And everyone understood we needed to respond. And so I think Americans will understand, and the world will understand, the world that does not understand what we're doing in Iraq, that we need to send troops there. But when we have our troops in Iraq, no one understands that. And that's where the conservatives are wrong, and they keep conflating the issue. And they keep saying Iraq, 9/11, Afghanistan, as if it's all the same thing. Well, so when Cheney is asked a very difficult question, what are we doing with Pakistan? What are we doing to get al-Qaeda? How does Cheney respond? Play the next clip.
I don't buy the premise of your question, Tim. I think it's wrong, and I think the sources you've quoted are wrong. Fact is, we've captured and killed more al-Qaeda in Pakistan than any place else in the world in the last 5 years. President Musharraf has been a great ally. There was, prior to 9/11, a close relationship between the Pakistan intelligence services and the Taliban. Pakistan was one of only three nations that diplomatically recognized the government of Afghanistan at that time. But fact is, Musharraf has put his neck on the line in order to be effective in going after the extremist elements, including al-Qaeda and including the Taliban in Pakistan. And there have been three attempts on his life, two of those by al-Qaeda over the course of the last 3 years. This is a man who has demonstrated great courage under very difficult political circumstances and been a great ally for the United States. So there's no question that area along the Afghan-Pakistan border is something of a no-man's land. It has been for centuries. It's extraordinarily rough territory. People there that moved back and forth across the border, they were smuggling goods before there was concern about terrorism.
So Dick Cheney knows. I mean, he knows where bin Laden is. He knows he's in this border area. He says it's a tough territory. And yet he thinks we shouldn't be there. He thinks we should be in Iraq instead. That's his position. We shouldn't fight the murderers of September 11th. We should instead, you know, go after a two-bit dictator named Saddam Hussein. Now, he admits that Pakistan had a close ties with al-Qaeda, that the close ties with the Taliban. Newsflash, Dick Cheney, they still do. They're still close with the Taliban. And look, you know, if it comes to pushing President Musharraf a bit, then maybe we should do that. But to simply not buy the question, to deny it's a problem, to pretend like we can do nothing about it, this is the president that said bin Laden caught dead or alive. And he's not even working to change the situation in Pakistan. Let's hear some more. Play the next clip.
But we need to continue to work the problem. Musharraf just visited Karzai in Kabul this past week. They're both going to be here during the course of the UN General Assembly meetings over the course of the next few weeks. We work that area very hard, and the PACs have been great allies in that effort.
Got it. They're visiting the UN. That's what we're doing. They're visiting the UN. It's been 2 years since there's been any insight into where bin Laden is, and we're happy that they're visiting us. Well, how about a plan to work with Pakistan? Again, it could be providing goods and services. It could be a favored trade deal. I would think if Dick Cheney is right and Musharraf has barely escaped his life, that he would appreciate not just an American force, but an international force, a NATO force, since everyone agrees that this fight is a justified fight in there in Pakistan. You know, don't call me a pacifist. I'm ready to fight, but I'm ready to fight the people that harmed us. So Tim Russert brings out the exact point. He asks, well, maybe we should be fighting in Afghanistan instead of Iraq. Let's go to the next clip.
Many people look at Afghanistan and say, however, if we had not been distracted by Iraq, we could have secured Afghanistan. We would not be a narco state, which it's on the verge of becoming, with 60% increase in opium, and we took our eye off the ball.
I disagree. There were narcotics being produced, heroin being grown in Afghanistan for centuries.
Okay, well, Tim Russert made a mistake there. He talked about 9/11, and he also talked about the opium. And, of course, what did Dick Cheney do? He talks about the opium. It's easier to talk about the opium than why we're not fighting our enemies. Let's face it. The war in Afghanistan, had we really gone after bin Laden, would have been tough. I have no doubt about it. But as I've mentioned before, I know people. I know Americans, patriotic Americans, who signed up after that deadly day, September 11, 2001, who signed up to fight the people who fought us in Afghanistan. And they've been diverted to Iraq. So Cheney gives a long list of how he says we've made major progress. He doesn't quite say how. He says, well, there's the Karzai administration, and they've got a constitution. But we're not doing anything about fighting al-Qaeda, are we? No, it doesn't talk about that. He talks about he's glad Karzai's in power. Well, I'm glad, too. But what about the war on terror, to which the president says Iraq is a central front? We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to move on and talk about Iraq. That's where Tim Russert goes. And how it is that the president and vice president claim that it's a central front. Why is Iraq the central front in the war on terror? Can they explain it? I don't think so. We'll be right back with it right after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Guy James means straight talk and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil. That I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, one in five children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Of course, Monday was the fifth anniversary of September 11th, and our entire foreign policy since that time has been based on September 11th. At least that's what the Republican president tells us and the Republican Congress. But what are we doing to actually fight the people who murdered 3,000 Americans? Well, Vice President Cheney has had to concede not much. He says we've made major progress, but he apparently hasn't even read the article talking about the fact that we haven't had a solid lead in 2 years. No, no, it is Iraq where our focus needs to be. Play the next clip.
August 31st, 2006. Let's watch it for the record.
Iraq is the central front in the war on terror.
And yet, if you ask the American people, is the war in Iraq a part of the war on terror? This is what they now say. 46 yes, 53%, a majority say it is not part of the war on terror.
Well, I beg to differ.
He begs to differ. Now, let's think about this. And let's think about the poll. The president says Iraq is the central front in the war on terror, the primary front. And Americans were asked if Iraq is even a part of the war on terror, and the majority said no. But whether it's a part, it clearly isn't the central part. You see, it's very easy to play with semantics here. If you asked, did Saddam Hussein support terrorist groups? Yeah, he did. As does Saudi Arabia, as does Syria, as does, of course, Iran and North Korea, as does much of the Arab world, as do many countries around the world. So why is Iraq a central front on the war on terror? Well, because we took a stable regime, the regime of Saddam Hussein, a stable dictator who was doing nasty stuff in his country, as do the dictators of some 30 or 40 other countries I can name, but wasn't really harming the rest of the world. He was bottled up. He was contained. We removed him, and we allowed terrorists, al-Qaeda and others, to come into Iraq. If Iraq has any terrorism today, it is largely due to Dick Cheney and his policy. In fact, I'm sure that Osama bin Laden is quite happy to have our policy in Iraq because it justifies everything that al-Qaeda claims we're doing, claiming that we're out there to conquer Arab territory, to get oil. If we had simply fought a war of self-defense, he couldn't make those arguments. So why was Saddam Hussein so important to take down? Well, Dick Cheney gives us the tried and true arguments in the next clip.
It's still difficult. It's still obviously major, major work to do ahead of us. But the fact is, the world is much better off today with Saddam Hussein out of power. Think where we'd be if he was still there. He'd be sitting on top of a big pail of cash because he'd have $65 and $70 oil. He would by now have taken down the sanctions because he had already, with the corrupted oil for food program, nearly destroyed him when he was still in power. He would be a major state sponsor of terror. We also would have a situation where he would have resumed his WMD programs. That was one of the conclusions of the Dulfer Report. So to suggest that somehow the world's not better off by having Saddam in jail, I think it's just dead wrong.
Okay, let's take that piece by piece. All right? He says that the world is much better off today with Saddam Hussein out of power. Again, think of the logic in this, right? He pretends that there's a world with Saddam Hussein in power, which is not very good, I'll concede, and a war with Saddam Hussein out of power where they greet us with roses in the streets and the sky is always clear, the sun is always shining, and the world, the birds sing. Well, you know, sometimes when you've got a known evil, when you remove it, and you can get a worse evil. So he says, think where we'd be if he was still there. He'd be sitting on top of a big pile of cash because he'd have $65 and $70 oil. Well, yeah, he would. In the same way that Iran is currently sitting on a huge pile of money, and Iran is developing nuclear weapons in a way that Saddam Hussein wasn't. He says that by now he would have taken the sanctions down. This is a really important argument. Cheney says that because Saddam Hussein would have gotten the world to remove the sanctions, then he could have resumed his WMD programs. That was the conclusion of the Dofel Report. And the Dofel Report, he's right. After all, the Dofel Report said that if Saddam Hussein did not have the overflights that we had, did not have the UN and American inspectors in his country checking on him every moment, which we had, that, yes, he would resume trying to obtain weapons of mass destruction. Okay. But now think about this. We had the sanctions. We had the inspectors. It was the Democrats, no one, to my knowledge, that argued that we should take them out. The Democrats said, in fact, we needed inspectors there, but we didn't need to go to war. So Cheney's argument is this. His argument is that because he thinks the world would not have let us continue the sanctions, it was good to go to war in Iraq, risking, you know, 2,600 now American lives and $300 billion and 20,000 wounded. Here's a clue, Dick Cheney. I think that the world would have preferred sanctions over a war. And I think if we made it clear that, in fact, that we would, you know, if they tried to remove the sanctions, war was the only option, they would have kept the sanctions in, and we could have concentrated on more dangerous countries. Let's play one last clip.
That was the intelligence that was provided to us at the time and based upon which.
So if the CIA said to you at that time, Saddam does not have weapons of mass destruction, his chemical and biological have been degraded, he has no nuclear program underway, you'd still invade Iraq.
Because, again, look at the Dofel report and what it said. No stockpiles, but they also said he has the capability. He'd done it before. He had produced chemical weapons before and used them. He had produced biological weapons. He had a robust nuclear program in 91. All of this true, said by Dofel. Facts. Also said that as soon as the sanctions are lifted, they expect Saddam to be back in business.
But the rationale was he had it, a growing threat. All the while, North Korea, which had one or two potential bombs in 2000 when you came into office, now has double or triple that amount. So again, you took your eye off of North Korea to focus on Iran.
Let's go back to the beginning here. 5 years ago, Tim, you and I did this show, Sunday after 9/11. And we learned a lot from 9/11.
Okay, so Cheney then goes into a long description of what happened on 9/11 to justify the war in Iraq. But before we get to that, let's focus on what he just said. He said, I don't care whether they had weapons of mass destruction or not. I wanted to go to war anyway. Why? Because the Dofel Report said that if we ever stopped watching Iraq, if we ever stopped sanctioning Iraq, then he would try to obtain chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. North Korea is developing nuclear weapons as we speak. Iran is on the verge of developing nuclear weapons. We have a country in a cage, Saddam Hussein trapped in a cage, not able to do these awful things. And we fear that if we ever, you know, release our sanctions, he's going to do these things. So we go to war with the person we've contained. It kind of reminds me of the middle brother who's hit really hard by his big brother. He can't quite fight his big brother, so he hits his little brother. It doesn't make any sense. And so what does he do? Dick Cheney cites information that is 15 years old. He says, you know, Saddam Hussein had a robust nuclear program in 1991. Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, he had one back in 82, too, and the Israelis came in. They destroyed the Osirik nuclear plant, and Ronald Reagan complained. How dare Israel destroy Iraq's nuclear weapons? Because, you see, we were an ally of Iraq at the time. We were an ally of Iraq. When Cheney says he produced chemical weapons and used them, the biological weapons, he neglects to say that he personally met with Saddam Hussein at the same time as American companies were giving Saddam Hussein biological and chemical weapons with the full support of both Ronald Reagan and George Bush. He was our ally, and he used biological and chemical weapons with our blessing against a war in Iran. So you hear what Cheney's saying? because our ally, Saddam Hussein, we helped him use weapons of mass destruction 15 years ago, we can't trust him not to use them today if we ever remove the sanctions and stop the inspectors. That's his argument? That's his argument on why Iraq was so important that we should remove troops that were fighting Osama bin Laden? Why Iraq was so important that we didn't need to be concerned about North Korea? Why Iraq was so important that by devoting our troops there, Iran is doing whatever it wants because it knows we're a paper tiger with all our troops stuck in Iraq. And what does he do to justify Iraq? He goes back to 9/11. And here's the thing that I wonder most. Do Republicans, do supporters of Bush and Cheney, and after all, he's got a 30-something percent approval rating, there's still a third of Americans that buy the Kool-Aid, do they realize that September 11th had nothing to do with Iraq? Because the president says so with one hand, and then in the next, what does he do? In talking about Iraq, he cites 9/11. We're going to continue tomorrow with more analysis of Dick Cheney and Meet the Press. I'll play a few more clips because I think it's important for you to understand exactly the logical fallacies. But for now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yes. Here we are. I'm glad to be with you this afternoon. Hello, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful southwest Florida. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Hope we have a good show in store for you. And, of course, anytime there's a really good show, that means you have participated as well. And you may do that by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Now, before I get started with anything, I got a rather nasty email last night, and I want to take care of it right now before I do anything else, if you don't mind, okay? Most of you, this doesn't pertain to whatsoever, so you can continue to play cards or whatever it is you're doing. I got an email from a gentleman that said he was told by one of his friends to try listening to the program yesterday. This man is a right-wing Republican. He tuned in to the program and wrote to me to let me know how terribly offensive the program was to him since I berated his beloved President Bush and his beloved Richard Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and the whole goddamn bunch there in Washington. And he was quite put off.
that I would talk that way about this wonderful administration we have in Washington right now. So I want to put on a disclaimer. If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today. And I see people are telling me, is this true? People are saying, I guess we're up and running okay. God, I hate to ask that question every day. That's what I hate about internet radio. You don't have that producer over there letting you know every little last-minute thing that's going on. But those of you on the head-on radio chat room, let me know if everything's up and running okay, will you? Will you do that right away, instantaneously, right now? And I also want to thank a friend of mine from yesterday. I got a nice note from him. John Ostojic, one of our local listeners here in the Southwest Florida area, wrote me a note that he was happy that Keith Olbermann had used the word dilettante when describing George W. Bush yesterday. And I happen to think that it was just the perfect word to describe him. And if you haven't looked it up, John did, and sent it to me. Dilettante, showing frivolous or superficial interest, amateurish dabbler, an amateur who engages in an activity without serious intentions and who pretends to have knowledge. Man, could there be a word? Could there possibly be a word in the dictionary that describes Junior George W. Bush any better than that one? I don't think so. John, thank you for telling me that. I'm glad to know that. And how many of you, and I want to give you a disclaimer right here, right now, I didn't sit down and watch this last night. I got to see a tape of it today. How many of you got to see Bow Tie Boy do his dancing deal last night? Huh? How many of you got to see Tucker Carlson make a total ass of himself on TV last night? Oh, mama. Now, I'm not exactly Fred Astaire. I've got rhythm, and I play musical instruments and sing and do all that sort of thing, but I'm no Fred Astaire. But, oh, my God, Tucker. Tucker, don't ever go on the dance floor again. And I got a feeling when they vote, he probably won't have a chance to go back on that one. Woo, boy, that was kind of rough. Jerry Springer didn't exactly have a great night either, from what I could see. My. And now what else we got on here? Oh, did want to let you know, those of you that haven't been keeping track today, everything's fine in Iraq. Well, it is. That's what the Bush people said. Said it's going as well as could be expected, and some things are, you know, some things are going much better than expected, and some things are, you know, aren't going quite as well. They did find 67 men killed in Baghdad.